All right, I'm going to try to talk way less and actually practice some andragogy here in just a second. So I'll try to make this one a little bit shorter. But before I get into, I guess, a new side of effective ministry and kind of what we're dealing with right now, I was just having this conversation with somebody and we were talking about, again, this is going back to something we mentioned at the very beginning, about the most difficult leadership ministry challenge that you will lead is yourself. And one of the things that I was thinking about when and after that conversation I just had is not, we all know the need we have for our own personal Bible study. It was asked of me, all right, well, when you were speaking of Sabbath, like, what does that look like? And I said, well, what that looks like for me is not just making or going on retreat with my wife and just getting away, but like we try to study a book. Like the last one we did, we went through the book of James. And but not with the goal of, hey, I'm going to preach this at Robertsdale, but with the goal of what y'all did last night that was so valuable, just learning for the sake of learning. And then we do a book of some kind of spiritual discipline together. But then I say all that to say it led me to also share something that has been on my heart to when it comes to ministry, especially in light of what we've been experiencing now, which I guess is a segue into what I'll share with you now, is that when you are leading yourself, I don't think it's really that any of us in here don't know the need we all have for personal Bible study, prayer, fasting, whatever that is. I think we all understand the necessity of that in our lives. That's not the dilemma. I think for a lot of us in ministry, one of the greatest dilemma that we'll all experience is probably how to handle praise and how to handle criticism. So I want to encourage you before I get into this to not let the criticism you receive, there's constructive criticism, that's another thing for another day, not let that criticism define you, but then on the other side of the coin, don't let the praise define you either. And there's a guy down in our area, the way he put it, he said in ministry, it's really important to have your feet off the ground, your head out of the clouds. And that in ministry right now, even within churches of Christ, there is an atmosphere in certain parts of what I call self-promotion. And because of that, it is easy at times to make our ministry about us. And that's why I love this theme of Jesus-centered ministry, not sprinkling some Jesus in, but keeping Him the center of it. Because if Jesus were to walk into my ministry, would He see, man, Andrew, you're promoting yourself, you're doing a lot of good stuff, or would He say, man, you're loving me, you're loving other people. And so, anyway, just felt the need to share that. All right, so Tom Rainer, in his book that I have up here, The Post-Quarantine Church, he made a statement that I thought was really interesting. He said, you know, anytime there's been a natural disaster or some type of historic event, one of the questions that's been synonymous with that natural disaster or that historic event is people ask you this: do you remember where you were when blank happened? Have y'all noticed that? Do you remember where you were when blank happened? Now, I hope this is obvious. I didn't live through the Kennedy assassination or the bombing at Pearl Harbor. I didn't live through that, but I did live through 9/11. And I remember exactly where I was when 9/11 happened. And not only do I remember where I was, but I also specifically remember the Sunday following 9/11. Do any of y'all remember that? One of the things that I remember, I have a very, very vivid memory of people piling into our church building, people that I hadn't seen in years. And even I remember my dad being like, Andrew, go get some chairs. You know, we're going to put them in the aisle because our creasters are here. And so that's what we did is we did. We put more chairs into that building to get more people there. And so what's interesting about that is during that natural disaster or that historic event, people were piling into churches. Then COVID hits. The pandemic happens. And if I were to ask you guys, do you remember where you were when the pandemic happened? You would probably be like, no, not really. Because it wasn't like all of a sudden like one thing, was it? Yeah. We heard about it. Yeah. We heard about China, right? It was happening there. Then it was, we hear, well, it's, you know, now it's in Italy. And then we're like, oh, there's one in Seattle. But, you know, it'll never, in my mind, I was like, I won't get in Baldwin County. And then I remember being on Twitter. That's the only thing I do remember is that there's a case in Bay Minette. And I was like, oh. And then little by little, we started to realize that it's here. But and so the difference, though, not only was it not like one event like, oh, did y'all hear what happened yesterday? COVID got here. You know, it wasn't like that. It was something slowly that happened. But the other side of it was instead of people piling into church buildings during this historic event, natural disaster, people could not go to them. But in a way, because of that, I think as a church, it forced us to reevaluate and brought to the surface some things that we should have been doing from the very beginning. And I said in the very beginning of my last message that there's two ways to learn a lesson. You learn a lesson through studies, or you learn a lesson through experience. Well, the difficult thing with this one, there's not a lot of studies on how to lead a church through a pandemic. In fact, when this whole thing happened, I was thinking about my youth ministry class that I took with Donnie Hilliard, and nowhere in my notes did it have anything about how to lead a church through a pandemic. But not only that, we haven't had the experience of what to do in something like this. You know, as I mentioned before, like some of your greatest lessons you've learned are through your experiences. Like as a kid, you knew, you know, don't touch a hot stove. You know, you get to college and you realize you're not as smart as you thought you were. You get married, you realize you're more selfish than you realized really that you were. But then this happened, and I think a lot of us thought that we knew basically everything we needed to know about the church. But then it kind of brought to the surface some things that I think we might have known, but we didn't really identify. And it brought to the surface really who it is that we as a church are. So what I want to share with you for the next few minutes, and I hope this doesn't come across negative. The purpose is for identification so we can know where to go. Because as you've probably heard people say, we don't need to waste our quarantine. You know, we don't need to waste this opportunity because I really believe historically as a church, we are going to look back at this time as a huge opportunity. And unfortunately, what's going to happen, some of us are going to look back and think, we missed that time when we could have done this. But then some of us are going to think, you know what? We use this to leverage for the kingdom. And so just a few things I want to share with you, and it's this. Lesson number one, I think that we all learned, is that our true identity throughout this whole thing has been brought to the surface. I've always heard that during moments of pressure, what rises to the surface is who you are, what you emphasize, and what it is that you're all about. And I really believe that this whole pandemic has shown what really has been our deepest value. We are really, really good at assembling, but not discipling. We're really, really good at assembling, but not reaching. Now, the assembly, no doubt, it has its place. And I'm not saying this happened at your place or my place, but I do know it happened at places. The pandemic hit, you could no longer gather in a building. And then they were like, well, what do we do? Because this is what? All we do. We get together in a building. Imagine for a second that you're watching this past Super Bowl and Tom Brady, he goes to the huddle and is giving out the play. And he starts like firing up the guys, like hitting them on the chest, slapping their helmet. And they're all fired up. They're shaking their head. They're pushing each other. And they say break. And then they go sit on the sidelines. But you're like, what in the world? What was all the hoop and hollering about? What was all the excitement about? You gave the plan, you got all excited, then you went and sat on the sidelines. That's kind of what we've looked like for years, is that we've gotten all each other excited, but then the Sunday was not connected to the Monday. Now, is assembly important? Absolutely. You know, the passage we love to use, Hebrews 10:24, right? That says to not neglect the meeting together as is the habit of some. But did we know that there's also verse 25? And what it also goes on to say is you don't need to neglect the meeting together so you can stir each other up to what? Good works. That our worship together is actually meant to be a launching point. That God didn't save all of us just to sanitize all of us and sit us on a shelf. He commissioned us. We are commissioned people. And so I think one of the things that this has brought to the surface, all right, maybe that has been the only main emphasis for us. So now, leading up to this, we have to make sure as we judge success, as JD also mentioned too last session, as we were talking about too, is that we have to reevaluate how we see success from here on out. The second thing is this, that the church should always be the group of people that are on the front lines. I mentioned at the very beginning that lessons are learned through study and experience. The only study I could find on churches and pandemics in the past was incredibly revealing. And some of you might have read this one too. It was highly circulated on different avenues of social media. The last pandemic, of course, was 1918, that flu pandemic. And the only study that I could find in connection with churches was incredibly eye-opening. It said that the churches in 1918 that decided to be on the front lines of that pandemic, reaching out to people, helping the hospitals, all of those things, they pointed out that those church buildings and groups of people are still around. Those churches are still around. But the ones that did nothing were actually the ones that fizzled away and are no longer there. Now, at first I read that, I was like, oh, that's interesting. Then I'm like, wait, why am I shocked? Like, that was the MO of the church back in Acts, was it not? Like, you fast forward even from that church, what we read about, think about the church in Rome. Like, they went down in the catacombs to pump each other up, to go out, to go to the edge of the city where everybody else was dropping off their babies that they didn't want, and it was the Christians going to the edge of the city and adopting them. And then when the people that were leprous that no one else would take care of, who was it? It was the Christians that were going out and taking care of them. Fast forward even more. There was this guy named Julian, and Christians called him Julian the Apostate. Kind of tells you how they felt about him. Julian was trying to get rid of Christians and wanted to do away with it because it was impacting his kingdom he was trying to establish. But here was the issue Julian had. He said, the issue with eliminating Christians right now is the Christians are taking care of their poor and they're taking care of my poor too. He's like, that's the dilemma we're in. That they are the ones that are on the front lines. And like, if we do away with them, then we're going to be a pickle. Well, here we are, pandemic world. We hear the commission, go into all the world and preach the gospel. But then government says, stay home. So now we have a choice, right? It's a crossroad. Christianity is all crossroad. It's not landmarks. It's crossroad. And so we have a choice. All right, now we have this crossroad. Which one are we going to pick? And unfortunately, I think what happened as a lot of us maybe have wasted that quarantine, because we thought, well, I guess we're just going to do nothing till we find out blank. No, there are things, there are a lot of creative things that we can do. So I wanted to get just some ideas real quickly and then get back to point number three. Maybe some things that you as a church have done to be on the front lines to serve during this time, to encourage each other. I'll start with just a few of the ones that other people, again, it's 99% of the creative ideas that of things we do are not from me. They're from everybody else. That's what I'm saying. The ideas of people are out there. So we're about to do a diaper drive, diaper giveaway for moms in our community. We have a Mommy and Me group at church, and these ladies came up with this idea. We were and basically what we're going to do, people are going to line up at our church building, and they're going to have an entrance to where they go in. They're going to go there. We ask them what size of diapers that they need. We hand them the diapers, the wipes. We pray with them. See if there's, we ask them first what they need prayer for. We pray with them. We give them information about the church. And then we're going to try to do follow-up. Now, what's been interesting about that is we're like, well, how can you get that off the ground? We posted it on a private Robert Stell page, and within 24 hours, it had 189 shares. And then called a local news station, they let me get on the news last week to publicize it. There's a lot of, like, people are looking for stuff. we just have to kind of think outside the box. So I want to hear some of your ideas. Let's practice some andragogy to hear some of your ideas of ways that you've been on the front lines. Okay, this is really going well.
We had a lady who, her husband just retired recently from the National Guard, and she was one of the ones that would organize getting those who were overseas letters and packages for hundreds of families.
Yeah.
So then she was trying to find her place pre-COVID of how can I fit and use my talents. And using that resource pool, she got in with the schools and knowing, hey, because schools aren't meeting, so those kids who have free lunches aren't eating.
Yeah.
So how are we going to help take care of them? You know, we used our food pantry, started that right before COVID. Now that with the schools, we've adopted a few families, you know, around Christmas.
Yeah.
That we should have been doing all along.
Yeah.
But because of, you know, we realized there was a need, and one of our ladies said, hey, I know how to do this.
Yeah.
And I want to do it. And
yeah.
She kind of just got the thumbs up and she just ran with it.
That's
that
awesome.
That was awesome.
Yeah, you know, one of the things I was thinking about that you were talking about not wasting this quarantine is it's given, I think, all of us an opportunity to see, like, I don't know if you've noticed that your congregation has mobilized in certain areas that they didn't before. Like, I recently I noticed how, like, our elder, like, we have a food pantry, but one of the things that happened is, like the beginning of the pandemic, we were giving a lot of it away. But then it slowly started to decrease, like, the amount of people getting interested. And so they thought, hey, why don't we expand this area and build a, put in a huge deep freezer? And so now, one Sunday night a month, we get together instead of our evening service and cook meals and put them in those foil containers, freeze them. And then instead of giving people like random dry goods that they still have to buy stuff for, give them meals that they literally just stick in their stove and they can cook. That's an idea.
I think a lot of times we get focused on what we can't do.
Yeah.
And so it's like normally we would go out to, we had a mission to go out to not go res. Well, right now it's for a lot of reasons it's not good to go on the res. But instead we were able to still, and you know, in June when people were saying don't go to Phoenix, we went ahead and went and we're able to figure out how to create things that then other people could take up.
Yeah.
To the res. Actually, there's a couple from Graymere there too that. And we did a lot of work with them. And just looking, and then when we got back here, it was, well, what else can we do? I mean, and normally we don't do work with National Inner City during the summer because they have lots of groups coming in from all
yeah.
over. Well, I got a hold of the guy and he said, actually, all of our groups have canceled.
Yeah.
And so that's something we don't normally do, but we did. So it's, okay, we can't do these things that are normal, but instead of just stopping that, what can we do
yeah.
that's different? And I
yeah.
think that we just have to make sure that we keep thinking of those ideas.
That's right. And these two are more insider focused, but one of the things I've seen some churches do, which I think is a really cool idea, is go bring the worship to the people kind of thing. You know, go to their homes and sing outside of their houses. That's an awesome thing. One of the things that kind of talking about things we should have been doing in the first place, the very beginning of the pandemic when we weren't together, what we did as a leadership team, which was elders, deacons, and ministers, we got together and divided up our congregation into a list and broke it down to where each elder, deacon, or minister would have like 10 to 12 names. And we did this, I think, for 20-something weeks to where every week you would call that list and pray with them. And see if they need anything. That opened up a lot of doors. But then we started doing that, and I was like, wow, we need to keep this up. Now, how we do that is different now, but it brought to the surface some things you should have been doing in the first place. So, all right, let's go to the next one. To rethink your facilities now for emerging opportunities. This is a result of this book right here. If you haven't read this, it's a really good one. The Post-Quarantine Church. By Tom Rainer. Some people call him Rainier. I just go with Rainer because I am. All right, and One of the things that he talks about in this book that I think is really good, he said, because now we can't be at our buildings and we started to realize, you know what, we really just use our building just to assemble 2 days a week. The rest of the 5 days of the week, our buildings are what? Usually. A lot of them are empty. And he said, and the issue has become, this is what happened, I know, at Robertsdale, is like if you used our building, it was like going through the House and the Senate to get that. There was this list and this form and an interview and a questionnaire. And by the way, I'm not saying that we just go, hey, anybody use the building and you know, it just turns into a wreck. But we've decided to connect with our community to let them know that if you need a building for anything, we want to be that building. So what we did, we went to our mayor, Mayor Murphy, and we said, Mayor Murphy, anytime you have a need for the city, like if you're wanting to pass out stuff, this was like during Hurricane Sally, or you're wanting to have a meeting of some sort, we want you to be in our structure. We want you to be there. And he goes to another church. So that happened. Then we joined the Chamber of Commerce. If your church has not done that, I highly encourage you to join the Chamber of Commerce. We told them the same thing. And so now all these chamber events, instead of them using another structure, when they have the Serving the Heroes Day, they get to do it at our church building. So all these policemen, when they do the Serving the Teachers, all the teachers come through our church building. And what's then happened now is the City Planning Commission, the Beautifying Committee, all meet at our building at least once a week. And that's just because we offered it. And we think about now, all right, we look at a lot of these church buildings that are either fading away. If we look at the statistics, a lot of them are not growing. Then we have to do something to utilize this structure that we're pouring a lot of money into. Why don't we use it and leverage it for the kingdom? This is not my idea. This is Tom's idea. And I really think that there is something to that, is to rethink from here on out how we can use our structures and by the way, anytime somebody in the city has an opportunity to use something they don't have to pay for, they'll usually take you up on that. All right. Yeah. Yeah.
You talked earlier about hospitality. That's kind of that same thing. My opening my home to my neighbors that are literally next door to me.
Yeah.
That's stewarding my home, stewarding those relationships that are right there that I see people every day. And this is, I think, from a leadership standpoint, how do we view our building? One of our buddies in college, Braden, said years ago that we are the elect, not the elite. And I think we see our everything connected to our church as being sort of elite first. For us, as opposed to, you know, everything is given to us to steward. My vehicle,
yeah.
My job, relationships, everything is a stewardship. And I think that should be a big conversation among church leaders of, okay, we have this facility. It does cost a lot of money to maintain. So are we willing to maintain it, to use it 2/7
yeah.
a week? Or are we going to maintain it to use it in other ways? And like you're saying, I think COVID has caused us to have to be creative.
Yeah.
This is where I think youth ministry shines. You know, seeing you guys pivot and adapt quickly to having a social media presence. The rest of the church is kind of playing catch up to a lot of youth ministries.
Yeah, that's right.
Over the last year. And I think that's a good thing in those ways, because you guys, and with regards to your second point there, think in terms of when you're on a mission trip, like you're in mission mode, right? So your kids are typically more outgoing, a little more creative. They're willing to engage somebody at a gas station, at a daycare, wherever you are. So when we're at home and we can't go on these trips, we're still in mission mode. That's the difference in Christians and non-Christians. We're living in the kingdom, so that's how we see life.
Like, yeah.
I would encourage you guys as youth ministers to take that mission trip mindset and recreate that culture. Be overt in talking about the same things that you talk about on mission trip. Do the same things. Try to talk to daycares, to whatever businesses. If everybody tells you no, that's fine, but keep knocking. Eventually, the door is going to open.
Yeah.
And that's where youth ministry is uniquely equipped to help challenge the rest of the church and church leadership. And then your role as a youth minister is to connect those teenagers and their families to the rest of the congregation
yeah.
in the midst of kingdom work.
Yeah.
That's that Andrew Gogi, whoever that guy is, all that kind of works together.
Yeah. That's right. And when you said that, it made me think of, do y'all get the call from local schools or high schools? Would y'all be interested in sponsoring a meal for the football team? or the basketball team, y'all get that call a good bit. What if you called them before in the summer? Be like, hey, we want to do a meal for the football team. We want to do a meal for the basketball team, the girls' basketball team at our building. Now, I will tell you, you can't take that on by yourself. Go ahead and have somebody in place say, hey, this is what I'm wanting to do. Then you're going to be playing catch up. But go ahead and have somebody in place to do that. Go ahead and call the school. They're not used to that, by the way. We have a lot of teachers at Robertsdale, and you know they're used to begging. Use that as an opportunity. One of the things I was thinking about, Gulf Shores Church of Christ has done a really, really good job with, they built a gym, and they had all these big plans of how to use it, and some of those fell through because of COVID. Well, then, speaking of pivot, we're going to get to that in just a second. They realize, all right, listen, we're in a community with a lot of retired people. They love pickleball. I don't really understand, but they love it. And so now they use their gym for pickleball and advertise, if you want to play pickleball, the Gulf Shores building is going to be open. Now, here's why buildings can be used in such a big way. So at the Orange Conference a few years ago, one of the speakers was talking about church analytics and how we view church analytics from a web standpoint for church growth. And he said that when people Google church, they're usually Googling church with these other two words, wedding or counseling. Wedding or counseling. So he says what's going to happen then is when they get married or they need counseling, if you already have in their mind a church building, who are they going to call when wedding or counseling needs to happen? You, right? He said those are the two, they're talking about people that aren't evangelical. Those are two things that they think of, all right? Number four, we had to learn to pivot, not panic. That is one of my favorite statements to describe this time. To be flexible, not to be stubborn. And, you know, one of the things that I think we've all learned throughout this whole thing is, it's like we had a plan and then something happened. Like, all right, we're going to get back to the building this week. We get in there for like 2 weeks, then somebody brings in COVID, passes it on to other people, and then we have to change, right? That it's constantly this process. And the art of pivot, I think, is successful when we as leaders stop focusing so much on charisma and start focusing on character. And we'll see it through the lens of, hey, I'm willing to be flexible. I'm willing to pivot, even though I don't like what might be happening. There's a psalm, and it's in Psalm 78. Can't remember the verse, but it says that he led them with a true heart and then led the people with a skillful hand. So it was first character that led the way, and then the work actually followed. The next thing I think we've learned is this, to seize the opportunity to reach the digital world. And this is not my expertise. This would be something better for Chad or Jason to talk about, but I will speak on behalf of our congregation. One thing that this brought to the forefront is our online presence was not as good as we thought it was. That, you know, we thought it was, you know, great and all, and then we start seeing other people's stuff, or then you also start seeing what's out there. You see like an awesome, clear thing. Where the person actually looks like they're in the living room, not they're on a speck on the dot of a wall way, 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 you know, 2 miles away, that they actually feel like you're there, opposed to maybe looking at the underneath of some guy's chin. Like, we've seen it all, right, throughout this whole thing. And one of the things that I would really encourage you to do that really, I know it helped us and it helps a lot of people, is to bring somebody in from the outside to evaluate the way you do digital stuff. And, there's an incredible opportunity to plant the gospel message we have in people's living room. But I'm telling you, if you're 300 feet away on a camera, they're not going to feel that. And so in order to do that, to help clarity, to help sound, whatever it might be, it's going to take somebody a lot of times from the outside. Invest in that, because I don't know if you see where we're going. You know, it's going to be needed. And I'm not just talking about worship services. I'm talking about during the week, the way you market yourself. And by the way, we talked about this earlier. Please don't misunderstand. Jesus is not trying to sell something. He's trying to help us understand value. There's a big difference. But we have to take advantage of this opportunity, because I mentioned at the very beginning that we're going to look back at this time, I think, as a very historic moment. And this is one of the areas that we're going to have to, I feel like, hold ourselves accountable for. In this historic moment, did we grow big in this area, get better in this area? Because most of the way that they're going to see your church is through your online presentation. And if it stinks, they're going to move on to the next one. All right. The church needs to experience community. I purposely put this right behind the other one, because as wonderful as FaceTime or Zoom or Google Meet or whatever it is, as awesome as those things are, people still crave community. We were created in the image of one we talked about yesterday within the Trinity that exists within community. He loves it. And so while all of those things are awesome avenues, nothing can replace community. And what's interesting about this is, like, even prior to this, when Kinnaman talks about why people are falling away, the number one reason this is that there was a lack of community. And so we already knew this, but then I think this highlighted even more, because I don't know if y'all have experienced this with your counseling, but we have two counselors that we send a lot of people to from our congregation. It's hard to keep up right now, because the social isolation has caused a lot of problems, especially for a lot of young people. And, you know, a lot of them had plans to do all these certain things that they're not able to do. And so what's happened is they're spending so much time looking at other people's highlight reels of their life, and then is creating a greater cause of depression, and the list can go on and on and on. And so we have to get creative on how to give people that community. And then the final thing, and then this will end it and we can talk a little bit, that one of the things that I've also learned through this whole thing, because I know some of these might have sounded negative, I'm not trying to come across as that, but one thing I have seen is how incredibly how resilient the church has been throughout all of this. And that has been a breath of fresh air that, you know, yes, there is still concern, it's really neat. You know, when Jesus says, listen, the gates of Hades aren't going to prevail against us. You know, what Christ has built in His kingdom, but the avenue of which He accomplishes kingdom, one of those ways, the church, it's been so cool to see how resilient the bride of Christ has been. And the resilience, I think, has been showing up in our communities when the resilience looks like what He meant for the church to be in the first place. So, any thoughts, things you want to add?
Andrew, Jason mentioned it, and you mentioned it, it's the word kingdom.
Yeah.
I think one thing through all this is sometimes we and elderships, you get too caught up in thinking, what's going to promote growth in between these walls?
Yeah.
And if I can't see where the growth potential is, or if I don't see the growth potential for something, then we don't do it.
Yeah,
and I think we have to work with our elderships and work with our own mindsets and work with, you know, our folks to say, God does the growth. I don't have to, okay, we're going to do this program because I think this is going to be growth. No, I'm going to do this program because we're going to serve, and we're going to serve the kingdom.
Yeah.
And you know what? If another congregation is doing it here and is doing it there, and one thing I love is that the stuff we're putting online, tides are rising. And so you reach out and you grab other things and you show it to your members and direct them to other resources. It doesn't always have to be you. You know, we get in this, I think you said it earlier, the idea of promoting and stuff, and just connect them to resources.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes other people's stuff is better.
Yeah.
It's okay to share it with them.
Yeah.
You don't have to be the sole supplier of everything your people need. And so I think we just need to make sure and open that up.
Yeah. And I love what you said, you know, when in reference to that, the kingdom. And I know growing up, I had always thought of the kingdom as the church. I don't know if y'all, that was the, but the kingdom actually refers to the rule and the reign of Christ. And so if we see it from the rule and the reign of Christ, and then we'll have that big picture like was talked about last night, and then we'll see that we as the church, and to me, that takes a lot of pressure off of us, doesn't it? To see it from that standpoint and see that we as the church are the means to which helps bring more people into that rule, into that reign. Think big, then see all that as an avenue. Yeah.
I got a question. I'm a Gen Xer, so I have an innate natural tendency to push back against social media. And
yeah.
Any of the guys that work in town would say that. My kids would say that. Here's my question, though. Obviously, I do see the value in a digital presence, and I think it's very valuable and in the direction of the world is going. How do we make sure that the online presence doesn't take the place of or become an excuse for personal evangelism and our relationships with people? Because that kind of worries me a little bit, that the more we tend to put our faces in a pad or a screen, the less we connect. So I'm just, what would you say to that?
Well, one of the things we kind of touched on a little bit earlier is right now this is the hand we're dealt. And that is one of the options that we have, and we have to choose. And I don't think it's going away. Like, for instance, I think maybe in the future, the Wednesday night one might, possibly. I doubt it, but for some it might. For some it might just be Sunday mornings. That I really, and I know this is really might discourage some of you, but some of those you're not going to get back into the building. I really don't believe that. And we're going to have to be okay with being effective with the ones that we have and then starting from there. One of the things that I think will be really important in the days ahead, if it's not already being done, is from the top down defining what church is. And then I think through that they will see the need for being together. Because like I said, yes, Zoom and all of those things are great, but it still cannot replace what you're saying. Being with somebody, it just can't be replaced. Because what's happening is I'm seeing some of those people, like, and they're saying it's COVID while they're not there. It's not. Now, there's a group of people that are there because they have a real reason, like, I'm taking care of this person. Yeah. But then there's people, like, again, I just know it's not that. And what's happened is, what's happened is they're slowly getting more and more disconnected. It's either going to be us reaching out to them, but we can't, you can try as best you can, you can't beg them back. That either they're, and again, this might sound discouraging and terrible, they're either going to fall on their face and see how much they need it and come back, or through something that was mentioned earlier by Richard, like letting them through, you can actually use social media to see, hey, look, we're engaging together and it's awesome. Not because you're trying to show off and to promote something that's not real, but to show what you know, your child can be a part of. I think the people that will come back are going to start to slowly come back because they see where that alone is going to get them. And they're going to start seeing the results. And that's, it was mentioned earlier that, like, when it comes to our kids, sometimes the result is something you find out later, but when it comes like the marriage, you can notice that pretty quick. And so I think once they start to see stuff, they're going to get back. I know I didn't really answer fully the question, but
I ran across a quote not too long ago that said, disciples are handcrafted, not mass produced. It's a great quote. I think in the church, we've been in the business of mass production to a great extent. I think spiritual transformation is the answer to your question, David.
Yeah.
COVID has shown us is that we have a lot of spiritual acquaintances, but we've got a lot of people that were converted once upon a time that have not been continuously transformed.
Yeah.
And so worship is our one layer of connection. And the guys from Madison have heard me say this ad nauseum probably, but worship has become our identity in the church. I mean, when you say, hey, I'm going on vacation, what's a good church? You're saying, what does the worship look like? When we take that identity like you talked about, and I love your vocabulary, resiliency, pivot, all of those are the things that need to be a part of our culture now. Instead of our identity being tied solely to one room worship, it needs to be connected to Bible study, at least in my mind, Bible study and kingdom work. Those are the two places over my life where spiritual transformation is taking place. And so, JD, in answer to your question, to me, social media is purely the vehicle. You don't connect to a person because of the vehicle. You connect because you're in the vehicle with somebody on a road trip, right? right? So the social media is just a way to get information to them. Like the substance comes from the relationship, and that's,
yeah,
we don't have deep community a lot of times.
Yeah.
We have this mutual appointment, and we have then that us versus them comfort that comes from that identity that we did worship, and so therefore we are God's people. And that was, you know, in Galatians, Paul is totally dismantling this physical sign of circumcision that the Jews have taken so much comfort in their identity, saying it's open up to everybody.
Yeah.
It's not about you, it's always been about getting everybody back to God and reconciliation. So I think,
yeah,
in our churches, as ministers, it has to start with us and our own spiritual life, not in our ability to teach someone. It's about how do we see the gospel and see our role in the kingdom.
Yeah.
How are we connected and reconciled with Christ? And are we being spiritually transformed?
Yeah.
And from there, then it pours out into your relationship. Social media is your telephone. It's just how you communicate with somebody. So make the post, but then to make the post effective, it's a phone call.
Yeah.
You're not coming, you show up on their doorstep, and you talk on the porch, you talk outside the window, you find a way to where they can't say no.
Yeah.
Put yourself in their world. And that's the key to me, is that community is all about being in each other's world, and that's what's happening.
Yeah. Well, and I think about like kids in your youth group that they're going like, I'm not comfortable with this, but then they'll go to a sporting event where there's everybody in the stands without mask on. Well, you could say, oh, I'm just so mad at the so-and-so family. Or you could go to their game. You know? Yeah.
I'll spur off of that. JD, this is something I've done some, and I've found it effective. There's one book called Social Media to Social Ministry. I can't remember who it's written by, but it was helpful for me. It focuses on Facebook. But Instagram, you can just YouTube, like, how can churches increase engagement on Instagram? And, like, there's these videos of how to make different stories. And one thing that I found helpful in talking about the vehicle of social media, especially on Instagram stories, like, you can do the sliders, you can do questions. And I have found if I ask for prayer requests, I've got kids that normally wouldn't open up to me about something they're struggling with, that as they're flipping through there, they'll enter something, and that becomes an opportunity for a direct message or a conversation or meeting up later or tell me how your week's going. You have a different spot on a slider for them, and then that starts a conversation. So rather than just viewing social media as an advertisement, as a billboard, we've got to take it a step further.
Yeah.
And use it as an opportunity to engage, to create relationship on a deeper level.
Yeah.
While we can.
That's right.
So I think if we just view social media as I'm going to tell you about an event, we're missing out on the tool that God's given,
yeah,
us.
And by the way, I, when you were saying that, it also made me think, I'm not saying that that the method is they haven't been here in a while, let's call them. Yeah, we're not comfortable coming back. You're like, that's not really yet. And then you're like, well, they're going to have to fall flat on their face. That's not what I'm saying. To me, the next step is either show up at their house, talk with them from afar, or go to their kid's sporting event. When COVID stuff starts to die down, you still see them in that pattern. The home, bring them into the home, connect them with another family, something like that. The home's going to be a huge opportunity from here.
And Joseph will say, I think one of the things we need to work on is creating a sense of belonging and community. You know, for those folks that are on the fringe, that are using the social media as an excuse, I think the reason they're doing this is because they don't feel like they belong to the church community are supposed to be attended. So we've got to work on doing something different to create that, more so than just coming in and filling a pew and saying I can't worship.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. One of those things maybe is to have expectations of them and give them responsibilities. That's one thing I think that helps, because once someone has an expectation of them and then they have responsibility, they tend to take ownership, usually.
I mean, remember this point. He said to build your people up, to get them involved with church work, you have to make sure they have two things, a friend and a job.
Yeah.
And that's something I've always remembered when I look at people throughout our congregation. I say to myself, who's their friend and what's their job?
That's good.
And that's really helped me in my ministry.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Back to something else that you talked about the pivoting. I think probably a lot of us pivoted pretty well at different points. I think we did, but I don't think we were. Our youth ministry was resilient in that pivot. That we once things, at least for us, have kind of got back a little bit more normal, you know, we've gotten away from the social media that we were doing pretty well at one point. We've gotten away from connecting with some of those kids that are on those fringes that we were doing pretty well when we were just connecting with everybody through those digital means and things like that. And so, you know, being, you know, I think that continuing education, that continuing encouragement is something that I need to do better on, maybe to continue to push me to, hey, once you've done well at something, keep it going rather than going back to what was comfortable beforehand.
Yeah. Yeah, don't waste the quarantine. Yeah.
All right, but that's all the questions we got. The food should be here soon. Philip Randolph from Faulkner is providing lunch for us.